Refinance activity is heating up. Are your originators ready to capture the opportunity? Join Optimal Blue experts Jared Sammy and Brennan O'Connell on October 7th at 1 p.m. Central for a live webinar, Refi Revival: Stay Ahead of the Curve with Originator Intelligence. You'll discover how to surface high-potential refinance leads from your closed loan data, reconnect with past borrowers using timely, data-driven outreach, and cut research time from 30 minutes to just one click. Register now with the link in the show notes for this episode to give your team the edge in quarter four and beyond. In case you missed it, Optimal Blue has announced the dates for its 2026 summit. Join us February 23rd to 25th at Talking Stick Resort and Conference Center in Scottsdale, Arizona, for a client-exclusive event packed with strategic insight and innovation. Attendees will gain early access to Optimal Blue's latest generative AI and automation tools, dive into expert-led sessions on pricing, compliance, and more, and experience hands-on demos of new capabilities. Plus, it's a chance to connect with capital markets pros, integration partners, and mortgage insiders, all while gaining actionable strategies to maximize profitability and sharpen your competitive edge. The Optimal Blue Summit, where proven mortgage expertise meets modern innovation to shape what's next. Early bird registration is now open at summit.optimalblue.com. Space is limited, so register today. Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Vice President of Hedging and Trading Client Services at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode. Hey, welcome everybody. Welcome back. It is August, August 4th. You know, summer's kind of winding down here a little bit, but I'm excited to be back. I missed the episode last week, but big thanks to Jeff, Emmy, Alex, and Mike for just a great episode on non-QM. I was listening to that on a little vacation last week, so hope everybody caught that. If you didn't, you should definitely go back and check that out. A good primer, or even gets a little bit in depth about where, you know, the non-QM, non-conforming jumbo market is today. We got another great show for you this week. We'll do a market update, of course, and then we'll go further in depth on what's going on right now. There's been some pretty big recent developments in econ numbers, and the tariff discussion, and other policy items from the administration. So looking forward to talking with James and Alex and Jeff about that here in just a minute. First, a little bit of data. As all of you probably know, if you're in the industry, and if you're not, welcome, and I hope you're curious about what's going on in rates right now. We had a huge rally on Friday on a dismal job report that had some revisions in it. It had, you know, just a very low jobs build number in general. We'll get way into that here in a little bit, some nuances around it, a little bit of education as well. A lot to unpack with that, other than it was just a poor report. The OBMMI is down to 6.65 and dropping this morning. So a big part of that is the jobs report and some of the news around that from last week. You know, lock volume still looks very good. Probably get a little bit of an improvement this week with rates getting closer to 6.5%. So that's something to keep an eye on. Let's transition over and talk a little bit about the market. Okay, welcome James, Alex, Jeff. We're going to talk a little bit about a lot of things right now. We want to start off with just a lot of the news that came out throughout the week. Last week, we had the Fed meeting, we had PCE, we had some GDP data. We want to get, chew into that a little bit, but want to then cover Friday's Bureau of Labor Statistics jobs report. We're going to dig quite a bit into that as well and tie it back to some of the other numbers that we saw last week, and then tie it even further back to some numbers that were revised, throughout this earlier this year. So why don't we kick it off there, Alex? What did we see last week in the way of numbers?
Yeah, we can jump into it. I wouldn't say let's not jump into it in chronological order. Maybe we jump into it by order of how dramatic the impact was on the market. I guess we can begin with the FOMC meeting, which was really just kind of business as usual. It was very much expected there wasn't going to be a cut. There wasn't a cut. Really, I think any drama surrounding the FOMC came out after the fact, late Thursday, early Friday, I believe it was, Kugler, who's currently a voting member of the board, she posted her resignation. She's headed back to the world of academia. Didn't really give a reason beyond that she was going to be teaching at Georgetown University. That opens up a spot for Trump to nominate someone else to join the board. In addition to, he will get to nominate a new chair next year when Powell's term is up. As we can fully expect, whoever the nomination ends up being, it'll be a very, very dovish individual, give Trump an additional vote on the rate cut front.
Well, the Kugler, just back to the Kugler, you know what, that sounds dramatic. I think I saw she was already up in January already. So it's just pushing forward just a couple of months. So maybe not quite as dramatic as it may appear at first glance, right? Trump was already going to get that nomination in the relatively near future. So it just speeds up that timeline a couple of months, a couple of announcements.
Right. Yeah. And we'll have to see if that potential filling, you know, is the tie vote or the vote that pushes across for a cut sometime between now and the end of the year. We are expecting a cut now. As we'll get into, based on some since release data since Thursday, that we are expecting a cut now in September.
Yeah, if we want to step into it. So on Friday, the jobs report came out. The initial expectation was that we would pick up about 100,000 jobs, and we only picked up 73. So it was a downside surprise. But the real kicker was that the Bureau of Labor Statistics revised the previous 2 months. They revised them both down from about 147,000 to 14,000 jobs per month. Meaning, you know, effectively we've picked up 30,000 jobs in total for this quarter. It's pretty slow and low compared to what we've been seeing. This definitely rocked the market. There was a lot of movement there, right into the media as well. There's a lot of conversation about why these numbers were revised, how we were kind of getting this, and we want to take a chance to kind of touch on that. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, of course, within the government, the Department of Labor, does a good job of sending thousands of individuals out to interview different businesses, different grocery stores, Walmart, and look at all these different products. They have a list of thousands of products. And what is the, you know, inflation on this? What is, like, who are you hiring? How is this developing? They have an army of people that they send to look at the numbers. And kind of two things over the past year is that the Department of Labor has seen a large cut in their jobs due to DOGE and the Republican efforts in Congress, the Big Beautiful Bill to back off government employees. So their army has shrunk, which kind of slows the amount of data they're able to get and process. Something that I thought was interesting while looking into this was that if the Bureau of Labor Statistics doesn't have data on an item. So what is a bag of chips in Washington, D.C.? If they can't really get that number, they do something called imputation. So instead of this is the number for the bag of chips in D.C., they go, this is the number for the East Coast, and they plug that in. If they don't have a good number for the East Coast, they go, well, this is like the Northern Atlantic, and they kind of build up from there. If you go back to about March of this year, you'll see imputation on the Bureau of Labor Statistics website was about 10%. It's now about 35%. So nearly a third of the numbers are being estimated effectively. And that might be a little scarier than it is. You know, again, if you don't have DC and, oh, instead you have to go with Virginia, you're probably getting a similar number, but it is a foggier number. And so with those foggier numbers, it's harder to see exactly what's going on. Looking at, you know, employment, if we have these foggier numbers, as months go by, we're more able to see what was really going on. We're going to have these revisions that are somewhat more surprising.
Right. And these were huge ones this time around, and they were all to the downside. So it shows a much bleaker picture, not just today, but looking back at least several months, which I think a lot of people have known this, right? You can kind of feel it in almost every industry, except for a select few where jobs are actually being created, which is things like healthcare, certain types of government jobs like education. In the meantime, we've all kind of felt it. Yeah, that's a good nuance, right? A third are being imputed, and then if you go over a long enough period of time, you're going to get enough revisions to the downside. And meanwhile, there's a lot more going on, creating a bit of a perfect storm too, that is creating these numbers that seem to contradict each other too, right? You've got very small job creation number, right? That's the number we saw on Friday, around 70,000, much lower than what we see in a very healthy economy, 200, 300, 400,000 new jobs added in a month, right? But the unemployment rate is still low. So where are the jobs going? I think what you can read in the stats lately, which creates a little bit of this storm, is you have foreign-born workers as a body of people has dropped significantly, like by about 1.6 million, right? I was reading, that's kind of a staggering number. That's just since the beginning of the year. And then, but meanwhile, you do have more workers coming in, either graduating from school or just getting to that age where they want to get jobs. And the number of U.S.-born laborers has gone up by about 2.5 million in that same period of time. Where are those people going? Where are they getting jobs? Not every one of those people wants to be a teacher or a nurse or a doctor or whatever, right? Or work in a hospital. So you're having this tale of two different stories that's being debated. But this jobs report felt like the time when it finally looked like those cracks that everybody says had been forming, you could actually see them now. And they've been around for 6 months, right?
The data has been a little slow, harder to collect, right? Because they just don't have as many people doing it. They're perhaps a little understaffed there. But if you have a son or a daughter, a nephew, niece, brother, someone who's graduating college, and you ask them, hey, what do you think the job market looks like out there? You're going to be hearing some bleak responses. You're not hearing like, oh, they can't stop hiring. Like, I'm going to have a job day one, right? That's not what you're going to hear. So these really peachy job numbers that we've been getting for the past few months, they haven't really jived right. And this revision fits the puzzle a lot better. And, you know, it's not that there was anything off with the numbers at the time. It's just that we're more able to see what was really happening. And it fits a lot more with our assessment. I was kind of joking about this, that, you know, the tech industry has been doing a lot of layoffs. There's been about 80,000 layoffs in the tech industry so far this year. And like all those guys walked out of Microsoft on Tuesday and they were like, oh, well, you know, I guess I'm just going to go Europe for a couple months soul searching, or hey, they need me on the avocado farm picking. Like, that's a good job for me, right? It's kind of curious that they could possibly be picking up these jobs so quickly. It makes a lot of sense that it just hasn't been that smooth.
Yeah. I think it's like you said, it's survey data, which makes it difficult to get exactly right, even with some of the revisions. You know, and we're not seeing it in the weekly jobless claims, haven't been showing a big spike either, which made it even more confusing. But some of that could be, again, you have foreign-born workers leaving the labor force, typically are not filing for unemployment benefits. Then you have some of who wants jobs are new workers who have never had a job, so they haven't paid into Social Security. They may not be able to get benefits. So a lot of these folks are not showing up in the numbers, but they're there, and they're finding it brutal to find work right now in 98% of industries.
Yeah, yep. It's definitely a white-collar recession of sorts. I saw some data on new grad employment rates. And for the first time in recent history, and by recent history, I mean over the course of decades since the 70s or 80s, this is the first time that college graduates in that age bracket of college graduation age, I think it's 21 to 29, you know, just your 20s, their unemployment rate is currently higher than those who didn't go to college. So the argument that I saw for that was it's largely driven by AI, as AI is able to fulfill a lot of the roles that these entry-level roles often, you know, cover. But yeah, I think it's a big hole in the economy right now. And if it remains this way, it's going to affect us way down the line, you know, as well. Because if people aren't able to get into the labor force, you know, how else are they supposed to get in, right?
Right.
Yeah, the phrase I like that we've talked about here on this podcast is we're in this low hiring, still kind of low firing state. I mean, James talked about there are some layoffs going on in tech, but it's not, you know, across the board, the entire industry. Like you said, you know, unemployment claims are not significantly up across the board. Companies just aren't hiring, right? They're not necessarily firing considerably. They're putting their CapEx into AI instead of hiring more employees. So it's kind of a good time for them to obviously invest in other things besides hiring new grads, or it's a hot time to do that. I'm not sure if it's a good time. Time will tell, see if it's a good time. But you know, the thing is, yeah, more cracks in the labor market than we have seen. How much are those going to add up? How does this start to offset what we're seeing on the other side? Maybe it's a good time to transition to, you know, the other factor in the equation here for the Fed and talk about what's going on with prices and inflation.
Yeah, we got PCE numbers last week as well. Again, it was a very heavy data week. PCE ticked up ever so slightly. You know, we were floating in the, call it 2.25, 2.3 range throughout the spring. It popped up to 2.6%. I don't think that is really what's on the Fed's radar, as we spent so much time here talking about employment, inflation popping up to 2.6% when they're comfortable with 2.5%. I do think they're going to backburner that for the time being. But again, not moving in the direction we would like to see it move. So just have to keep an eye on that. They're going to need to see a trend evolve there over the coming months for them to you know, prioritize inflation again, I believe.
It would be a little early for the Fed, you know, to jump in. And with the jobs report, there's probably something a little bit more important they want to look at. It does feel more likely that that rate cut is coming. Trump will get his wish in September. Like that 2.6 is the top line number. But if you strip out energy and food, which, you know, why would you do that? Well, both are made at home. The U.S. produces our own. So if you were looking at goods that we kind of take from abroad or are produced other places, the inflation is, it's closer to 3%. So there is an uptick in items we are importing, which is consistent with what you would think, which also means that it's a ticking up inflation and a slowing job market. You know, a little early to jump on what that means, but it's definitely what the Fed has kind of been fearing. Why we kept the rates higher for longer was we need to put this inflation to bed before we can really start worrying about the job market too much. And maybe it's with the lagging data, maybe there's some tough calls coming.
Yeah. And in the perfect storm we were just talking about, you may be able to keep a tight labor market with an economy that's barely growing, which is kind of what's happening right now. Right. That may not be good. It isn't good. It isn't good for things like innovation and just having a generally dynamic, dominant economy. But for now, we're likely to be able to keep people employed to some extent. And you need a little bit of that slower growth to keep inflation from heating up again. But then you get into the blame game or whatever you want to call it. Is it the tariffs that are causing prices to go up? Is it the hot economic activity that needs the brakes put on it by the Fed continuously? There's still that debate that does seem to be turning a little bit with this recent jobs report. Most economists after the report on Friday are going to say it's all down, like it's going to get worse from here. And that seems like a thesis that's pretty easy to believe at this point. In that case, then the Fed really does need to step in. If the unemployment rate goes up, which it went up 0.1%, but it's not near where it needs to be for the Fed to be on paper to be compelled to act to where you're going to have all, you know, at least 7 of the voters call for a cut.
Yeah, agreed. I think we're quick to forget how much airtime, you know, in the spring when the employment picture looked rosy, how much time, I know I was talking about it, you know, or let's not forget about inflation. I remember myself saying that over and over again. As James is apt to point out, those foreign imports are ticking up. And I think that's absolutely something to keep an eye on as well.
But if we stay around, I mean, part of this inflation story is that we've gotten inflation down. It's just hasn't gotten below that 2.5% barrier, right? We've been stuck in that 2.5-3% barrier. I guess the ultimate question is, can the Fed justify that we're okay with just slightly higher, stubbornly high, can't quite get to this next floor to go address a weakening employment situation?
I think it was explainable in the economy of 2024, what was widely considered to be a very strong economy. People are okay paying a little bit more when they're employed and, you know, they're seeing, you know, decent raises each year, chicken or an egg. If wages is driving that inflation. But again, when folks are employed and seeing a consistently rising paycheck, they're okay discounting that 0.5% extra. Could see that turned on its head very quickly, though, if we see unemployment continue to rise.
Yeah, we haven't seemed to get to the point yet where we're all accepting that 2.5 is the new 2. And I thought it was interesting, too. I had forgotten, Kevin Foley pointed this out on LinkedIn the other day. I don't know if you all saw it, but that 2% has only been on paper the target for about the last 20 years. Before that, it was more vague than that. It was basically keeping whatever it is, sustainable inflation or low inflation. So 2% was actually implemented by Ben Bernanke. At least I'm taking Kevin's word for it. I assume he did his due diligence on that. And since then, that's been what everybody talks about. And we rarely ever get below 2%. I mean, it's 2.5 just where we have to stay at this point. I think if we see another employment report, you know, my prediction would be that we almost certainly see a cut in September and probably cuts from there if the unemployment doesn't, if the unemployment reports don't continue to improve.
Jim, to piggyback off something you had said earlier. So with all these numbers and, you know, this shift in the economy, as long as it's kind of growing, we're in a good spot. Something that, you know, earlier this year was a really big story was that GDP in the first quarter was negative. And when people started peeling back the onion a little bit, hey, all these companies knew the tariffs were coming. They front-loaded these imports to try and get ahead of it. And in the GDP equation, if you have imports really high, it drives it negative. So it was kind of, you know, once you normalize it, it's not that bad. A few weeks ago, we got the advanced GDP numbers for Q2, and they look pretty good. It's 3 points up. So, hey, we're like growing. That's a good number. But our imports are down about 20%. So now you take the exact same logic. You know, if you take the equation, you dump it down on one side, you're raising the other. And something that I think we all kind of knew would come, but the pendulum was swung pretty far out when the tariffs were first announced. Everyone front-loaded, and it made our GDP look bad. Now it's swinging back the other direction. We maybe look better growth-wise than we actually are. And I think that, again, that lines up with, hey, this lower jobs, hiring is just not so quick. People are not necessarily being laid off, but it's not hiring season. Companies are investing their CapEx more in assets. We're kind of hitting perhaps the peak if you're going back to your college economics, but that GDP is kind of celebrated a few weeks ago. But if you peel that onion back, again, it's not normalize it. Our economy has not really grown so far this year, which is pretty consistent with what we would see in these jobs numbers.
Right. And yeah, it's maybe not as invincible as we thought earlier this year through some of the turmoil of the tariff discussions and all that we've talked about on here every week. But it all goes back. It does kind of fit the narrative that the administration laid out many months ago, that there would be some pain, there would be tariffs, that there would be a shift from foreign-born workers to U.S. workers, which that does seem to be panning out. At least the numbers are there. They can, the jobs are kind of being handed over from foreign-born workers to U.S. workers, at least on paper, versus being created, which is not maybe not exactly what you want to see. You want to see jobs being created in an economy that's growing, right? That means businesses are investing. That means there's innovation happening. You know, from the perspective of the new administration, all this may be playing out exactly to plan, minus I think they'd like to see the Fed obviously lower rates. That's been made extremely clear out in the social media. They'd also like to fire the head of the BLS. I thought that was an interesting timing on that. I know I get frustrated when I see all of these revisions and why are the revisions so big? Why can't we get it right the first time? I've kvetched about that for years. But what you mentioned earlier, James, explained a lot of that. And there's been articles written about it over the weekend where, especially again, in this perfect storm. So I'm kind of getting off on a tangent here, but I was reading something interesting about why this time around there's more of these imputed numbers. And it's that a lot of the largest corporations in the country are very reliable at reporting because they have a whole part of the business that reports the labor statistics every month. And those businesses they're not as cautious about hiring right now as some smaller businesses that are having difficulty growing or that may be more affected by tariffs or more uncertain about tariffs. So they're slowing down their operations much more quickly. They were not reporting because they were focused on these other things, these other changes, this other volatility in the environment right now. But once they caught up, they were starting to see those smaller businesses were not doing nearly as well in terms of hiring. We're not hiring people and may in fact have been laying people off or allowing them to resign without backfilling. So just another sort of symptom of where all these things come together, right? The tariffs and the unknowns kind of caused these businesses to be cautious, but also caused them not to report their labor statistics for 4 months. And now we're playing a little bit of catch up and seeing what was really going on.
Yeah. I think I really just want to, you know, highlight the risks involved with and why it's caught so much attention in the media of this firing of the leader, the BLS, and just the what is appearing to markets to be very partisan in nature. You know, on the one hand, Trump says she was inflating numbers up into the election to make the economy look really good in an effort to aid Biden. And then there were revisions just after the election. And now there are these revisions now, which I would actually argue with Trump that, you know, it's actually helping him by having a lower jobs number. But he doesn't like seeing a lower job number because a lower job number does show a weakening economy. You know, if there was partisan influence, you know, that is something that we would want to cut down on. I would agree with him there. But I think that the manner in which it has been already made partisan, they need to be very careful there, because a lot of the changes that have occurred this year have called into question some of the assumptions about the U.S. economy, the credibility of the economy. This firing, I think, is kind of a cherry on top in regards to how independent our data is. For decades, we've been known as independent, nonpartisan data. On the other hand, you know, a lot of people say, "Oh, the Chinese, they inflate their numbers. They don't give us full numbers." And we just need to be careful not to fall into the same issues, because it makes these countries harder to invest in. Because at the end of the day, businesses want clarity. And if even if they have got rid of partisan influences, if the market is under the impression that it was not in fact partisan, and that the move to fire was partisan, that's going to call into question a lot of the legitimacy that our economy benefits from.
There was a good comment from, I forget who made the comment. It was a pundit on CNBC on Friday, but just talking about, at least in the medium term, you know, I think the concerns you brought up in the long term, we've got to be very careful, right? How much do we degrade the confidence of the U.S. economy in the long term? But at least in the medium term, you know, we have the largest, most complex, but also most transparent market that there's ever been in the history of time, right? So, you know, businesses don't really care. At some level, they don't care about the politics. They just care what the hard numbers are, and they're going to figure that out. Whether it takes some time to figure out what's that going on in the economy or their own readings, you know, they understand what's going on in the economy at some level. And so it doesn't, you know, matter too much in the medium term, whether the numbers get inflated in one direction or the other. Businesses understand what's going on because, again, we have such transparent, strong markets overall that we will be able to figure out that. So hopefully we can ride this out and not cause too much damage in the long term to the credibility of the overall economy.
All right. Man, heavy discussion once again today, everybody. Good stuff. Yeah, keep your eye on it. What's on the docket this week? This is a very slow week in terms of
quite quiet. Yes.
Yeah, nothing to really speak of. Nothing that I would call a big market mover. But a lot of I think the fallout from the unemployment report is what a lot of folks will be continuing to talk about this week. What's going to move rates? What's going to move the stock market? Even though we're up today, there was a big hammering of equities on Friday, but starting to. You know, the stock market does seem to be very resilient, and that's where the money is. So as you said, Jeff, people are going to figure out what's going on and dig through some of the, you know, push away some of the politics and figure out where the money's going. And there's still apparently a lot of opportunity out there, even though we're kind of in the summer, used to be the summer doldrums right now until about Labor Day.
Yeah, but you didn't have time to touch on all the tariff dynamics that have happened the past week or two, right? With the August 1st deadline and all that came along with that. Plenty to talk about there that I'm sure we'll get to next week.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Really good discussion.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. Big thanks to Jeff, James, Alex. Great discussion. We'll talk a little bit more next week about some of the additional tariff news coming up this week and just what the fallout looks like. This week from the unemployment report, and see some of you next week as well at the Western Secondary out in California. If you're headed out there, let me know. I'd love to meet up. That's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thank you for tuning in to Optimal Insights.
Technology vendor selling real solutions or just the idea of them? Too often, companies pitch big returns, offer free trials, and promise seamless automation, only to reveal during implementation that the tech doesn't actually exist. At Optimal Blue, we take a different approach. Our AI-powered automation is already live, already delivering, and already saving lenders real dollars. we show you exactly where the ROI comes from and how it reduces risk. No vague timelines, just proven technology that's working in production today. AI at Optimal Blue isn't just about delivering software. It's about empowering lenders to make smarter decisions, operate more efficiently, and stay ahead of the curve. Built around real capital markets challenges, informed by direct engagement with thousands of clients, and focused on delivering measurable value at no additional cost to clients. While others talk about AI, we're delivering it. Innovation that delivers for your bottom line. Learn more at optimalblue.com.